Humankind was created as God's reflection. In the divine image of God, created them. Next one, 1 Corinthians 12, 12 through 22. The body is one, even though it has many parts. All the parts, many though they are, comprise a single body. And so it is with Christ. It was by one Spirit that all of us, whether we are Jews or Greeks, slaves or citizens, were baptized into one body. All of us have been given to drink of the one Spirit. And that body is not one part, it is many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, does that make it any less part of the body? If the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, what would that make it any less a part of the body? If the body were all eye, what would happen to our hearing? If it were all ear, what would happen to our sense of smell? Instead of that, God put all the different parts into one body on purpose. If all the parts were alike, where would the body be? They are indeed many different members, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I do not need you, any more than the head can say to the feet, I do not need you. And even those members of the body which seem less important are in fact indispensable. Revelation 7, 9 through 10. After that, I saw before me an immense crowd without number, from every nation, tribe, people, and language. They stood in front of the throne of the Lamb, dressed in long white robes and holding palm branches.
In the late 1990s, there was a coffee shop about 5 minutes away from here on 16th and Blackwelder, known as Diversity. I started going there my freshman year in college to hear our own Tara Henry play Come to My Window by Melissa Etheridge on guitar. It was the coffee shop where I met my first girlfriend, a place outside the norm where those who were quote unquote different hung out. The word diversity was just starting to gather steam, but soon would become a value and service that was sought out in many social settings. Fast forward 8 years to 2008. It was right after our country elected its first African-American president. Diversity centers were opening up on university campuses and in urban cities left and right. The university where my former partner attended school was opening one, and she was hired as a student worker to help get the organization up and running. Their mission was similar to other diversity centers, to create and help maintain an inclusive campus environment that challenged oppression and provided a space for dialogue and engagement. They also looked for ways to advocate for equity and social justice. I remember being asked by the center to come and host an evening where we would speak about the oppression that the LGBT community received from religion and Christian churches in particular. Each and every event provided the space for someone to have an aha moment, an opportunity to raise one's consciousness and realize that even though we're all different, we have a lot in common and deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. 1 year later, when we moved from California to Minnesota, my former partner applied to and was hired at the Diversity Council in our new town of Rochester. This organization was not located on a college campus, but was founded in 1989 to combat racism and discrimination in the K-12 public school system. She and her volunteers would travel from school to school and lead prejudice reduction workshops for different classes and grade levels. They also helped businesses and nonprofit organizations build something called cultural agility, to be agile or responsive when it comes to encountering other cultures than one is used to. Rochester, Minnesota was a mostly white town. Many of the older folks in my congregation didn't have a single black or brown person in their school or town growing up. There was so much unfamiliarity which can breed fear. But in recent years, there has been an influx of Somali and Sudanese refugees into the state of Minnesota. Despite so much emphasis from white adults claiming to be colorblind, as though that's a good thing, children are very open about the ways that they notice difference. Being able to talk about the ways that we're different and alike as we grow up is a healthy way to reduce prejudice. If we say we're colorblind, then we're saying we don't notice or appreciate the beauty of different cultures and ethnicities. My partner was a butch-looking woman from the Philippines. She had short hair, brown skin, and dressed in what others would call men's clothes. Many of the children in Rochester had never seen someone like her, so it was helpful for kids to learn that there are many different places that we come from all over the world, and many different ways that we dress and express our individuality. Last year, a diversity center opened up here in Oklahoma City, right down the road on 39th Street in the Gaborhood. The aim of this center is to provide mental health services to gender diverse communities and to disenfranchised or marginalized people of color and their families. By definition, diversity means a range of different types of things. It means having variety. And from the vast variety of living creatures around us, there is no doubt in my mind that God believes variety, difference, and diversity is a good, necessary, and healthy thing. Variety and diversity are literally what keeps all living species existing. If we were all exactly the same, we would have been wiped out a long time ago by this or that disease or bacteria. In the stock market, they call it diversifying your portfolio. If you have all of your money in the same bucket and something happens to that one bucket, then you've lost everything. Diversity and variety are valued in so many areas of our lives. Variety of food choices, the colors, shapes, and smells of flowers and plants, the many options for clothing styles, variation in music genres. But for some reason, when it comes to people, many initially opt for sameness, sticking around people who aren't that different from themselves. And that makes sense. We understand ourselves and therefore are more at ease with those who go to our same school, live in our same neighborhood, eat the kinds of food we eat, and look more or less similar to us. But if we stay that way, not venturing out to learn about and include more of the diverse world into our little bubbles, things like white supremacy marches in Charlottesville, Virginia, begin and continue to happen. I have a clergy colleague in Seattle, Washington this week who helped someone take down a sticker from a light post next to his church. The sticker said, "Diversity is code for white genocide." That's not literally true, of course. No one is trying to kill all of the white people. But it appears that some people think God's variety in creation is threatening their own existence, or that including God's variety of creation within their churches, school systems, workplaces, and positions of power is threatening to the stronghold of power that they have over all these arenas in society. The thing is, they're right. God's variety of creation, God's diversity and creativity is threatening if you expected that you and those just like you were supposed to represent the sole pinnacle of all things beautiful, good, and powerful in this world. In the ancient Roman world of Jesus' time, the politicians and philosophers, the ruling class, often used the metaphor of a body to describe the proper social position that each segment of society ought to occupy. Of course, those in power compared themselves to the head of the body, saying that each body needs strong leadership in order to point civilization in the right direction. The head is the ruler of the body, so the wealthy elite with the correct heritage, of course, are in the best position to make all the decisions for the rest of the body. The hands and feet play an important role, but mostly because the body needs the hard grunt work to get done, and the elite who described themselves as the head thought that work was best done by those they deemed to be a lower class, also known as someone who doesn't look like me. The Apostle Paul draws on the same metaphor in 1 Corinthians. But instead of elevating the position of the head, he takes an opportunity to point out that although each part plays a different role, that does not make any part of the body less honored, and it certainly does not call for abuse in any part of the body. Each part must be respected and cared for by every other part. Paul teaches that all parts belong to the same body. If the body were all eye, what would happen to our hearing? If it were all ear, what would happen to our sense of smell? If all the parts were alike, where would the body be? The head cannot say to the feet, "I do not need you." Those members of the body which seem less important are, in fact, indispensable. As a kid, did you ever try to draw a picture of God? Did your picture of God end up looking like you? Or like someone you knew that had a lot of power in your life? In one of the two creation stories in Genesis, the author says that humankind was created as God's reflection. Imagine trying to draw a picture of God which included the likeness of everyone in the world. Or a picture of God that included the likeness of all creation. Many people shy away from the book of Revelation because it includes scary images and visions that don't always make sense to us. But our text from Revelation today brings me much satisfaction and hope. Many believe the book was written by the Apostle John, the son of Zebedee, about 60 years after Jesus' death. It was during an intense time of Christian persecution when Roman authorities were beginning to enforce emperor worship. Christians believed that Christ, not Caesar, was Lord, and the author believed that Christ would be returning soon. Thus, the tone of the book is apocalyptic. There is much symbolism in the writing, and our reference for today comes from the 7th chapter. The author has been given a vision of what will happen in the future. He writes, "After that, I saw before me an immense crowd without number, from every nation, tribe, people, and language. He saw the diversity of creation in heaven, the variety of all kinds, not just from one church or one faith or one race or one state. His vision is one of inclusivity." Our theme for today was not to honor or acknowledge diversity, but to embrace it. To embrace is to hold closely in one's arms, especially as a sign of affection. Not to tolerate, but to welcome. The definition literally says to welcome with open arms, to support willingly and enthusiastically, not begrudgingly, not resentfully, not reluctantly. God did not create living beings in God's own image and desire for them to be put up with, but God's kingdom, Jesus' mission, was for the divine image, you and I and everyone else, to be embraced. Wouldn't it be great if one day all the diversity centers went out of business because they had become irrelevant and no one needed to be taught to welcome all of God's variety and creation because it had finally become a reality? What if you didn't need special coffee shops in order to meet someone considered different? Because everyone was welcome, included, and safe in every public gathering space. What if some white supremacists decided to throw a so-called free speech rally in Boston, let's say, and only a few dozen showed up to fight for a monopoly of power by white folk? But then, over 10,000 of God's diverse humanity showed up to march in peace for inclusion and equality for all. We're getting there, and that day will come even closer when we commit to being the church, to being the body of Christ, where all parts are honored and revered. Be the church, embrace diversity. May it be so. Amen.